We would like to welcome you to the July 10th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by the city council and is not affiliated with any for-profit and nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking, availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within this board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. Sign postings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. We have several on our consent agenda. Item number one is the petition of Ward Architecture and Preservation, file number 24-003289 COA for 210 West Wayne Street. Number two, petition of Eli Lori, file number 24-003351, COA 310 West Charlton Street. Item number three, petition of Wabena Architects, file number 24-003292, COA for 301 West Jones Street. Item number four, petition of Eli Lori, file number 24-000-3353 COA for 221 East Charlton Street. Item number five, petition of Chris Clark, file number 24-002950-COA for 36 MLK. Item number six, petition of Hiru Patel, file number 24003348 COA for 351 MLK. And that is all. Were there any projects? Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Houle, so move.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. We'll do a vote of acknowledgement. All those in favor? Oh, I do need a second. Thank you, Mr. Higgins. That's like our whole board. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. If your item was on the consent agenda, it has been approved. You are welcome to leave or stay as you like. We will now move on to the approval of the agenda. I will make a note in pre-meeting. There was discussion of taking a vote for recommendation on a text amendment regarding stucco. So I would encourage you when making the motion to add that to the regular agenda and approve with that inclusion. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Higgins, move to approve the agenda with the moving of item 24 to regular business.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a second?
Who will second?
Thank you, Mr. Houle. We'll do a vote of acknowledgement on that. All those in favor? All right, the motion to approve the agenda with the additional item has been approved and is passed. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the June 12th minutes?
Houle, so move.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Again, we'll do an acknowledgement vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. This month, there are no items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. We have one item that has been requested to be moved to the continued agenda. Is there a motion to approve the items on the continued agenda?
So moved, Thompson.
Do I have a second?
Houle, second.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. We'll do a vote of acknowledgement. All those in favor say aye. Thank you. Moving on to the regular agenda. Okay, staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, please locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and will call on you by name. You will submit your name for the record and then you may comment. We ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. First up on the regular agenda is the petition of Casa Guava, file number 24-000-2729 COA 314 Drayton Street for an illuminated sign.
So again, this project's for 314 Drayton Street. The applicant is requesting after-the-fact approval for one illuminated incidental sign and one illuminated wall sign. For this review, again, the open sign will be considered an incidental sign, while the Cuban sign will be considered a wall sign. And my picture's down, so give me 1 second. So this is the Cuban sign that is considered the wall sign. While it likely meets a size requirement, window signs cannot be illuminated and only one incidental sign can be permitted per business. So staff recommends that this sign be removed. This decision won't impact the applicant's ability to apply for a window sign that meets the standards at a future time. So the second sign is this open sign. The sign overall meets the standards. One thing of note is the color of the sign currently has almost pink, almost red lettering with that navy blue border. At a previous HDBR meeting, board members believed that white is the most compatible color, so staff recommends that this be changed to a white color. Staff recommends approval of the illuminated incidental sign at 314 Drayton Street with the following condition: because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, a condition being change the color of the illuminated sign to solid white and deny the illuminated sign at 314 Drayton because it does not meet the standards, that illuminated sign being the window sign again. Any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
One quick one. Is there any reason that if the applicant wanted to, they couldn't switch, like have the open sign become the window sign that they got rid of and keep the Cuban coffee?
So yeah, it will be feasible. I'll have to double check the numbers, but I believe they were both below that maximum that was allowed. So in theory, they could if they wanted to go that route. Anything else?
Any other questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record? Is the petitioner here? No?
Emily Ebersole.
Thank you, Emily. Did you have anything that you wanted to present to the board?
I didn't hear the last piece of what she said. I think it was about the lumens. Is that what was stated?
About the color of the illuminated sign?
Was it the color or the lumens themselves, like the actual color? Okay, so not like how bright they are, just the color. Okay. And then the question of switching it out from one sign to the other, what does that mean?
Yeah, so staff can probably best clarify this, but it's the way that the ordinance is written. So you can only have one of each type of sign. So, you know, a way to get around it or keep one of the signs would be to just kind of swap which is the incidental and which is the wall sign.
Okay. And what is considered a wall sign? Where would that be placed in the restaurant?
So the window, so I meant to say window sign. So window signs, anything in that window opening, whereas an incidental sign is any sign that's below a certain square foot. So technically either one could be a window sign, but we're considering one incidental, so you can save at least one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's everything.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak on this item? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
I guess I was a little bit confused about the conversation, whether or not the applicant, what they wanted to do based on earlier comments on the sign, and just wondered if they might, they, even though I'm not supposed to talk, the applicant come back, but I did have the question, they need to tell us what they want to do.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Mr. Higgins?
I concur with what Mr. Houle said, because I know the reason for my asking that question was if they had a preference as to which one they wanted to keep. It's kind of a Sophie's choice thing, that we could word the recommendation to meet with what their desire was, since they can only, according to code, keep one.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
Yes, that was my question, too. I didn't quite follow the conversation, whether or not the applicant wanted to switch the sign and the approval or leave it the way it's written at this point. I know we're repeating us, but, you know.
Yeah, I think.
We've decided to leave the wording as is. We'll keep the open sign as considered the approved one, and the incidental sign will come down.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'll go around one last time. Mr. Houle, do you have any further comment or discussion?
Nothing else.
Mr. Higgins?
Nothing.
Mr. Thompson?
No more comments.
Okay, at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins, I'm with the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to file number 24-002729 COA at 314 Drayton Street. Approve the eliminated incidental sign, which is the open sign at 314 Drayton Street, because it is visually incompatible and meets the standards, and deny the eliminated window sign at 314. Excuse me, let me back up with one staff recommendation, which is changing the illuminated portion of the sign to white, and to deny the illuminated window sign at 314 Drayton Street because it does not meet the standards for sign illumination.
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to approve the illuminated incidental open sign at 314 Drayton with the staff recommendation of changing the color to white and to deny the other window sign because it does not meet the standards. And we have a second from Mr. Thompson. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is approved.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
A question that might be important as we go forward.
Sure.
Since this is a minimum quorum, do we have to have four votes to approve something? But four would be, no, I don't know, I'm just asking.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I think you just need a majority.
I'm sorry.
Just a majority of the members who are present.
Okay, thank
you. My understanding. That's a good question.
Thank you. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of VP2 Design, file number 24-002765 COA for 427 East Jones Street, new construction accessory buildings, part one and part two.
Thank you. Chair. Bear with me here. So this is an application that is returning. You all reviewed this last month, and I won't go too much into the weeds again. This is a property in question. Jones and Price originally built as two separate houses. It has a unusual side yard on Jones Street that's heavily landscaped. In addition, as you go around, as you may recall, if you go around on Price Street, the rear portion is actually a separate house. So we're talking about this area as one house. And then the lot, as I said, wraps around, comes back to the lane, as you may recall. There is a non-contributing one-story garage that is proposed to be demolished. So I'm going to go into the staff report here. So first of all, staff would like to express our thanks to the project architect and the owner. The applicant has returned with a revised design. As noted, this was last before you had the June 12th HCBR meeting. You asked the applicant to look at a number of different design elements in the plan. And we think that the applicant has returned with a design that is very responsive to the concerns that you all raised. And I'm just going to walk through them. I think it's easier to just kind of go through each point. What the first one that you asked, you'll see the image in front of you right now, side by side. The design that you saw last month is on the left-hand side, and the revised design is on the right. There were some concerns about the proposed staircase, which was a little bit unusual. That would have provided access to the second floor. Again, this is facing north in that side yard. Again, it's part of that same lot. The applicant has returned with a more traditional design that is for the proposed staircase and balcony, which I'll let the project architect go into more of the details on that. But again, this is what you saw before. This is what is being proposed. Then the second point, we discussed this, and I'll go back here to the lane. Almost all the lane buildings on this block and on other blocks of East Joan Lane are of masonry construction. The applicant, as you probably recall, was proposing a frame building that there were some questions about the visual compatibility. So the applicant has returned with a brick proposed facade. There are two options for the color, both of which staff feels could work. It's really more, we defer to you on that. So that's the second point. The other thing that relates to the lane and the context is the design of the roof line. As you probably recall, this was it was a kind of high-pitched side gable roof, which there was some question about the visual compatibility. So there still is going to be a side gable roof, but similar to many of the other carriage houses on East John Lane, there will be brick parapet walls at either end. So it will appear similar to the neighboring properties, and in staff's analysis, be visually compatible. In addition, there were just three other items. Restudy the proposed material for the doors to have them meet the standard. The applicant has revised their submission, clad wood entrance doors and steel garage doors that meet the standards. The applicant should provide you all with a thorough review of any proposed meter boxes and HVAC units, as well as the proposed refuse plan for the site. And then the applicant has returned. It was a question about exterior lighting. The applicant has proposed two options for sconces flanking the entrances on East Jones Lane and then also on the north, fronting the private side yard. Here are just some photos of the existing conditions again. We won't go into the whole sandboard map that we looked at before, but this is the property in question. There's now a non-contributing building right here. And then this is the side yard that then wraps back. These have all been demolished, all the properties on the lane. So with all of that, an easy recommendation. Staff is recommending approval for the request for new construction accessory buildings, parts 1 and 2 at 427 East Jones Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff?
I have one.
Mr. Hull?
Jonathan, on the exterior lighting, it looked like the owner was proposing options. Does staff have an opinion on either one of those?
Jonathan, here, your microphone.
Sorry, I'll let Victor, the project architect, walk you through whether the owner has a preference. But we thought they were both, they meet the standards, which is what we were looking at. They're metal, they're small. So, but thank you, good question.
Are there additional questions for staff? Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
Victor Pluznik from BP2 Design. As you can see, it's changed quite a bit from my last previous proposal. This is kind of all from the comments from the last proposal. The one question that I do have, actually, I meant to bring this up, on the refuse and the meter locations, currently they're all, everything just sits in the lane. 7 days a week, cans are out. All meters are right on the face of the, on the lane. So that one I've got to look into. I'm not sure how much leeway there is on that. Other than that, I did speak to the home or actually the contractor this weekend. Homeowner has been out of the country for a little bit, and they reviewed the project and they weren't really thrilled about the stairs. They like their circular stair, but they said they can't have the circular, then they'd rather have no stair. I mean, there is an interior stair, but the exterior stair, they're not really thrilled with it. So they were, and I know it was kind of short notice for me. I find out on Saturday night, but they were looking at removing that portion. Other than that, as far as the lights go, the owner had no preference on either one. Again, they're kind of traveling, so it's hard to get in touch with them here. And color-wise, the lighter color brick, again, that one was an option. It would match the original house a lot more than the traditional brick color that's the other carriage houses are. However, the other carriage houses, you have about, I'd say, half a dozen out there that would blend in a whole lot better with that. So that's kind of really the options that we're kind of going back and forth on at this point.
Are there questions for the petitioner?
In light of the comment about the stairs,
mm-hmm.
would your client have a huge problem if this case was continued so that you could iron these things out?
I think they probably.
Hi again, Jonathan Mellon. So I think, Michael, it's a good question, but I don't want to speak for Victor, but I believe what you're talking about is Victor is just removing this.
Correct. Yes.
Keeping this.
Right. The balcony would stay, just the stair itself would be removed, and then the service yard would stay, would just be diminutive at that point.
So it's up to obviously you all, but I think staff could work with the architect. It would basically be the exact same thing you're seeing now, just this staircase would not be here.
Correct.
Okay. Just so that I'm sure, there's not going to be any stairs, no circular or no.
The only access to that balcony will be from the interior.
Inside.
Yep.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Do we have anyone virtually?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I will start with you.
I guess I should ask petitioner this, but you have two different kind of lights. Which one do you prefer or the owners would prefer?
The curved one, the first one, I believe, is the original selection. And then the alternate was the one with the squared off one below it. At this point, we're trying to get some feedback from the owner as well. So they're kind of hard to get in touch with.
And I have a question for staff. Are either option with or without the stairs and either one of the lights?
Yes, they both meet the standards. So, they're not radically different. So staff felt both were visually compatible.
And the other comment I have really is a general observation. The whitish brick, there's another building somewhere. It was downtown. I can't remember where I saw it now. And it was quite interesting how it stood out among the other homes or buildings. I forget where I saw that, but it was the white. First time I'd seen it like that. So the white is, although not the same color as the others on the block, I think could be acceptable, at least my point of view.
Just a side note on that. Actually, it's not a true white. It's kind of an off-white, more towards the paint color of the main house.
Yeah.
Thanks, Victor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
A little frustrated that we're being asked to pick this brick and this brick, stairs or no stairs. I much prefer seeing a more finalized petition. I'm actually leaning toward a continuance since nobody can seem to decide what they want.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Hull.
I would tend to agree with Mr. Higgins, but the options seem to be inconsequential. If we said no stairs, okay. If we said white brick, okay. If we said leave it up to the owner to pick his lighting, it seems like that would be okay also.
Yeah, I think a couple comments. I appreciate the applicant's willingness to address comments of this board from the last time the application was before us. But I think, you know, the challenge of presenting options is that it puts this board in a little bit of a tough spot because personal preference shouldn't play into any decisions that we make. And then we're being asked to provide a personal preference.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think when staff looked at this, as Mr. Hooley just noted, the light fixtures both meet the standards. the removal of the stair, as you can see right in front of us now, which we were not aware of, obviously, before, we think would still meet the standards if you just had the balcony up here. So that is not a big, I think basically what you're being asked is whether you feel, given the context along this lane, whether it would be more visually compatible for that to be a traditional brick or a blonde brick. So I think when it, you know, what is visually compatible with East Jones Lane, or do you feel it'd be more visually compatible to have it be? I would note that the, I haven't found a photo, but this is painted brick. So this would have been traditional brick. It's not blonde brick, given the date of construction and the rear portion that is not painted. More likely, you know, the option of the traditional brick, also in the context of East Jones Lane, where they are the more traditional brick. But again, staff felt, you know, the applicant had been so responsive to all of your points, that, as Mr. Hooley articulated, these were relatively minor. They weren't saying, you know, do you want it to be four stories or two stories, or do you want it to have a hip roof or a, you know, it's really getting into the nitty gritty in terms of color and some minor detailing. Sorry.
No, I appreciate the clarification. I'll go around one more time for comment, Mr. Thompson.
Well, it seems to me if the applicant could make decisions now for a recommendation, that might help move your application to the next phase. But I do want to compliment, are you the architect? Or just the side-by-side comparison was very helpful for our review. I enjoyed not having to dig too deep on every page. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
I agree with your point about the personal preference. I would also note that if the stairs are eliminated and the landing becomes a balcony, it's too wide. Because it's 4 foot, it's 4.5 feet as opposed to 3 feet for a balcony.
Yes, so I was just going to bring that up because I know the balcony thing came up at one of our prior meetings. What is a balcony? What's a porch? What's the deck? As part of your, I'm not telling you what to do, but as part of, if you were to grant approval, you could say we are approving the removal from the plans of that staircase and limiting the depth of the balcony to meet the standards. And that's something we could work with. We're fortunate to have an architect who's wonderful to work with.
Is that all? Mr. Hull?
One second.
Sure.
I would also like to thank the architect. Wherever he is back there. There he is. for going through this and singing to resolve 99.9% of the issues we had. Thanks a lot.
Okay. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Stan Houle. I move that the Historic Board of Review approve the request for new construction accessory buildings for 24002765 COA at 427 East Jones Street with the following conditions. One, remove the stairs and adjust the width of the balcony to the appropriate compatible width, and two, that the architect submit to the staff their recommendation for the color of the brick and for their final recommendation for the exterior lighting.
Thompson, second.
Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Houle to approve the petition for 427 East Jones with conditions, and a second from Mr. Thompson. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote? Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That motion is approved.
Thank you.
All right, next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Wabena Architects, file number 23-005347 COA for 409 West Taylor Street. It's a non-contributing demolition and new construction, small part one.
Sometimes technology does not like to work with us. So again, this is for 409 West Taylor Street. This is a non-contributing demolition, as well as a request for approval for new construction, small part one for a three-story structure with a penthouse, again at 409 West Taylor. So currently this building is listed as non-contributing to the district, both national district and a local district. The home, as it sits, is right beside the I-16 flyover, as well as a billboard that's been there almost as long as the flyover has. So again, we talked about this history of the building last month. I'm going to go over it again briefly. So staff believes that this structure was likely built in the 1870s as a duplex, but again, no exact date is known, and the surveys both give us two very radical dates. So again, the structure was built as a duplex. At first appeal, it appears on the 1888 Sanborn maps. It was either, we'll take a duplex, either with wide porches or quadplex. By 1898, the front section had been closed to be, again, be a duplex. It was possibly enlarged at the time as well. By 1913, the structures had the same footprint. And then by 1916, both had front porches, as well as 407 had that one-story Taylor structure as well. 409 was enlarged by 1939, though the neighboring building retained the same footprint. By 1950, 407 had become a flat roof structure. It was conjoined, so it was 407 and 405. It was likely either rebuilt or severely altered by that time. 409 West Taylor does retain the same footprint that it's had since 1937. 407 West Taylor was demoed sometime between 1937 and 1998 based on available information. The front porch of 409 was enlarged sometime prior to 1998, though the roof came off sometime in 2007. By 2004, the chimney had also been completely removed. In 2019, a COA was issued for a color change. This was to address a code compliance issue. Again, the structure also has this veneer on it that was visible as early as 1998. The sides have some form of faux brick on it. It's covering at least two layers of siding as well. The common wall was also brought down to the studs at some point. It's currently being protected, if you want to say that, by a masonry wall. So now is the question of whether or not the building is contributing. So based on available information, staff does determine that it does fall within the period of significance for this district, which is period of significance being 1733 to 1960. Again, the structure was likely constructed in the 1870s. Staff does not believe that the structure meets any of the other criteria for to be listed as contributing building due to, among other reasons, the construction of the I-16 flyover and the demolition of surrounding structures, the current condition of the structure and the amount of work necessary to bring it up to some form of habitable condition, the demolition of 407 West Taylor, which was the conjoining building, and the lack of historical connections. So for this part of the project, staff does recommend approval of the demolition with the conditions that be documented per MPC policy and that the building be deconstructed and the material salvaged. But any questions with this portion of the project?
Is there questions for staff on the demolition? Okay, thanks, Kelly.
Okay. So alongside the demo, the applicant is requesting construction of a three-story structure with a penthouse element. Staff does believe that overall it meets the design standards. There are some details that still need to be specified. Those are listed on the staff report, and those should be included with part two of this application. There are a couple of minor elements that staff want to kind of bring to your attention. The one is with the parking. This is why the project was initially continued for so long. The applicant has worked closely with traffic engineer to get the parking figured out. I believe parking, traffic engineer is waiting on one element, but overall they have approved the parking. There are some elements on these plans that staff will need to review in part two that includes elements such as fences and gates around the parking itself. Per previous discussions also with traffic engineering, the front porch is currently encroaching into the public right-of-way. That is allowed per ordinance, but it's encroaching too far into the public right-of-way. The sidewalk in front of the property needs to be a minimum of 4 feet wide with no obstruction to meet ADA. So the front porch will need to be pulled back a little bit to meet those requirements. The applicant will also need to get that encroachment permit from the city as well. Finally, staff requests that the board discuss the penthouse element of this. That's something that's not typically seen with a lot of projects. Staff did believe in this case it was compatible because of its limited visibility from the front facade and given that's pulled back, but that's just still just a good point of discussion for future projects. So with that, staff recommends approval of the demolition of the non-contributing structure with the following conditions. Because the building is otherwise, a building otherwise meets the criteria for non-contributing demolition, and that's to document the property as well as to deconstruct it and save the materials, and to approve the new construction small part one for height and mass with the following conditions to be submitted to the board for review in part two, and then the conditions are listed on the screen. Any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
I did have one question.
State your name for the record.
Oh, Stan Houle. Thank you. The information on the proposed parking, again, we brought this up earlier about our role being separate from parking folks, but I did want to ask if the arrangements, a gentleman's agreement for using that space, or is there going to be an easement, or what's the commitment?
So the applicant can verify this, but I was previously told that the same owner owns both properties.
Are there other questions for staff?
Yes. Looking at your trusty little model, I've got questions about the height and how it relates to the buildings to the east. Because I'm looking at the Google Street View, and it just, I don't see how the perspective of, or the height of those two are the same.
Pulled up right now.
Because, I mean, you've got a, you know, two-story with a basement, with a raised basement, and you've got three full stories in a penthouse. It looks like the proposed new construction would a good story, if not more, taller than those buildings.
Yes, when we're reviewing it, staff kind of considered, even though it's a basement level, considered it three stories effectively. So staff did see it as kind of compatible. It was the penthouse that we were more unsure about because of the additional height that brings with it. But staff did see them as being compatible because they're both effectively three stories at that point.
And did the applicant provide any sightline views?
No, he did not. It was just the model.
I think what you're asking, or I don't want to speak for you, is that you're saying that the proposed new construction is would in actuality be quite a bit taller than the buildings we're seeing here on the corner.
As you look at it.
Yeah. We'll let the project architect describe. He can go through, you know, what are the exact height of the buildings on the corner and what the proposed height, so that, yes, but we get your point about the accurate, how accurate is that model that you're seeing before you? I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, so, and to clarify, you said no sightline views were provided and no elevations, including the surrounding buildings, were provided?
It was just for the building itself.
Mr. Thompson.
Continuing that discussion, the building that we're seeing, the 2.5-story or 3-story building that's cream colored, is that a building of record on the historic map?
Yes, sir. Majority of the, like this and then these buildings right here, are all new construction. So it's only this building right here and the building, this building right here, are contributing. The rest are new construction.
And the height map for this area limits it to what?
You didn't say the 4 or 5 feet.
No, stories.
That's my main story. Sorry.
Okay.
Right. It was, if you count the penthouse as a story, it's still within the height map. So it's either 4 or 5 stories, I can't remember.
Okay. Thank you.
There are additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is James Webina. I'm the architect of record. With this project, the question of the height, that building that we were looking at, the cream color building, it's actually 3 full stories, which is what we mimic the main mass of our building as. We do realize that the penthouse does go above that, but it still stays within the ordinance as far as the height limitations go. There are quite a few other 3-story buildings around that neighborhood that are either new or historic. And then there's some 2-story ones as well. We picked the brick because there's quite a bit of brick building around that space and then that neighborhood. So we stay within the fabric. Mr. Lind, the owner, owns 409. He owns where the billboard is, where the parking's going. That parking was developed for actually West Wayne. He owns those as well. And so there's 3 spaces that are dedicated to this project. So that's what allowed us to make this happen. And he's also been in contact with the billboard people, and they agreed to the parking layout and everything else. And as far as fencing goes, we will supply those details when it comes to part 2. Same with the windows. And we are able to shorten our balcony enough to stay within the restrictions of the encroachment. So we can take care of that. So we basically agree with everything that staff has recommended. And we would love for you all to approve us so we can move to part 2 and clean up the details on it and get you everything else you need.
Thank you, Mr. Webina. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Yes. Do you have any elevations that show this building in perspective to the surrounding buildings, both to the east and to the south? And also, do you have any sideline views?
So the south would be the West Wayne buildings. Those are 2-story. I can provide those, as we actually have the drawings for those. And so I can give you sideline as that. There's a parking lot to the east of us directly, and then we have the cream colored building. So that's one of the reasons we did not actually do a full blown block, but we can actually do that if you need it. And then obviously to the west of us is the billboard and the crossover. To the north of us, we have that more historic brick building, and we can include that direction as well if you need it.
Ms. Houle, can I have a follow up question? The layout there, how accurate are the buildings in white in comparison to the proposed building?
The best I can say is we shot lasers on that building and we're able to pick up the top of the building, and that's what that's modeled after. The mass of that building, as far as the height goes, I think the parapet on the actual cream colored building is too high on the model. So we are full story above that cream colored building with the parapet. Without the parapet, we're exactly the same height. No, I'm sorry, without the penthouse. Yes.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Webina. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? We ask that you please come forward and state your name for the record. And if you have not already, please make sure you sign in.
My name is Artis Wood. I am chair of Scenic Chatham. And we know in our studies of billboards that they certainly degrade the value of property. And so I think it would be marvelous if this non-conforming billboard by the owner would come down. Maybe you could pass that on. I also want to ask about the picture that was up where it shows what is there now. Yeah, let me see. The top picture, you had this top one.
That 409 on the building?
Yeah.
It showed the beige buildings here.
Yeah,
that one. Thank you.
No problem. This street is being treated like a lane, and you're not supposed to have garbage cans on these streets. So I would suggest, would ask that non-compliance would be corrected, both in the beige building and in whatever you build that gets approved. Also, you have a sidewalk now that you're going to give. Will there be any tree lawn or room for trees to be put in?
Compliance issues, unfortunately, are not in our purview, so we can't address that or help you with that issue on a property that's not before us today. And as far as the sidewalk and tree lawn, I believe that that is also outside of our purview as well. That would be that would have to be addressed with the City of Savannah.
Well, since the applicant is here, maybe you could let him overhear that it would be nice to have at least a tree, if not a tree lawn, and that it is non-compliant to have garbage cans. So we pass that on. Thank
sure.
you.
Thank you. Sure.
I think, as you know, Ms. Wood said there is a tree lawn ordinance. I think that's what it's called. So we can highlight that to the architect. You dig into that, you'll find it. Thank you.
Is there another member of the public that would like to speak? Please make sure you state your name for the record.
Hello, Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. And excuse me, could we pull up the facade rendering? First item is just to staff. It would be helpful if for all of these applications, there was a list of the contributing buildings that are visually related, meaning ones that you can have a sight line to, because you're supposed to make a decision on visual compatibility and you don't have the list of buildings and you don't have photographs of them. So this is a general comment. I think it would help all of us if that became part of the process. On the facade, I had just some stylistic comments and questions. One is, we've seen this in other buildings, this transom window that sticks out on the facade. If that's a transom window there, it's hard to understand what that detail is. If it is a transom window, it would seem to just make sense visually for it to be recessed. Also, the coursings here between the stories, I'm not sure why they stop. It would seem that to be more visually cohesive for them to continue. And then on the porch, it's quoting classical architecture with square columns, with capitals, but this entablature is thin and it also projects beyond the columns. So it would be nice if classical architecture is quoted, then to set the entablature back and make it taller. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Just state your name for the record.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. We are sad to see the loss of yet another historic building in this area. However, we appreciate staff's thorough research of this property and the recommendation to deconstruct versus traditional demolition. In regards to the proposed new construction, our ARC expressed concern of the visual compatibility of the Juliet balconies with the transoms, or what that is supposed to be, because we were confused about that as well, on the north facade, and the proposed window pattern of being 2/2 in an area where that is not common. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Do we have anyone virtually?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
As far as the divisions of the windows, I would assume that that can get cleared up in part two with the detailing and not the mass and height that is part one. And then the transom windows above the doors for the Juliet balcony are in plane with the actual door, so it would be recessed. It's probably a modeling issue at this point. Again, we would have those details in the next submission for part two. As far as landscaping goes, I know there's quite a bit of landscaping for the civil drawings, on the civil drawings for the parking area. I don't know if that sidewalk is going to be wide enough or anything, because it's fairly narrow already. And we extended our stairs based on the depth of the stairs of the existing building, which obviously do not meet the current ordinance. So again, we're going to pull those back and fix that problem. And then obviously work with the city of Savannah and see what they want to say as far as tree and all that goes.
Thank you. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion, and no further public comment will be accepted. I will go around to each board member two times. Mr. Houle, I will start with you.
This is a very, very interesting proposal. And if we approve part one, I look forward to the conversations about part two.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Mr. Higgins?
I'm not at all comfortable with approving the height and mass of this without some better perspective of the surrounding context. We're given no elevations. I would like to see what view you have of the penthouse from various placements on the sidewalk, the street. It's my interpretation that this kind of looms over some of the both new construction and contributing buildings, but I don't know because I can't see them. So I feel pretty strongly that this needs to be continued so that those can be provided.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
Well, Mr. Higgins, I understand your perspective, but they're allowed under ordinance to have up to a three-story building, and visual compatibility is, I don't think, necessarily the issue with the plan to build this building at the height it is. So that's my two cents about that. I think Mr. Houle's indicating dealing with some of these things with part two would be, I think, good to do some of these things then. But the height mass, I think, can move forward the way it's presented.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Houle?
Nothing more.
Mr. Higgins?
I just will reiterate what I said.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
No further comments.
All right. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Mr. Houle.
I move that the Historic Board of Review for case number 23005347 COA approve the demolition of the non-contributing structure at 409 West Taylor Street with the conditions as listed in the staff recommendation, and further that we approve the new construction small part one height and mass for the three-story infill with a penthouse at 401 West Taylor with the conditions as listed in the staff recommendations.
There's a motion on the floor from Mr. Houle to approve the petition for 409 West Taylor to include the demolition of a non-contributing structure with the two staff recommendations and approve new construction part one with the five listed staff conditions. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
All right, Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is approved. Next up on the agenda is the petition of LS3P Savannah, Michael Garcia, file number 24-003354, 123 West Oglethorpe Avenue, rehabilitation and an addition. Jonathan.
Thank you. So, thank you. So this is going to take a while, so get comfortable. So as I just wanted a couple things for the record, as kind of public announcement or whatever. We did receive a great deal of public comment on this, close to 50 emails/letters. Staff, myself, made sure that all of those were posted so you all could see them. We also responded to all the applicants directly to confirm that we've received them. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understands that. And we appreciate all the public comment that we received on it. Also just wanted, as a kind of public service announcement, some of the folks that reached out to us requested that, who were in opposition, that this not be heard. And I just wanted to make clear for the record, as you know, we review applications that come in and to determine whether they are complete or not. We don't determine whether they go to you all. If it's a complete application, it comes to you all and you make your decision. We can't say, no, we don't want it to go forward. So I just want the public to understand that. In addition, we are not applying our personal preferences. We are applying the ordinances. So there were some questions about that. So I just wanted to kind of appreciate you all indulging me in terms of how we look at this. So if you bear with me. Since this is the last item, we have time. So I'm sure you all know this wonderful building. It dates from circa 1820 federal style. It's on West Oglethorpe in Orleans Square. It was originally, as noted in the staff report, located to the north. It was moved, saved, which is wonderful, to allow for the construction of a federal building. It's highly visible in its current state because directly to the west is a surface parking lot. In addition, directly to the south is a surface parking lot. As I'm sure you all are aware from reading the papers, the city of Savannah has recently made an initial decision of what to do with the Civic Center. I believe the decision that was made was to keep the Johnny Mercer Theater, demolish the rest of the structure, restore at least a portion of the Oglethorpe plan for new development. So there's going to be a great deal of development and change, which is kind of the point I'm trying to get at. So again, going back here. So here we go. Sorry. Got a little turned around here. Okay. So here's the property in question. Again, dating from 1820, the applicant is proposing a rear addition that would front onto the lane. So I'm just going to go through here. Excuse me. So we would like to, first of all, thank the project architect and his team. They did meet with us, and they provided a very thorough submission, which always makes our job a lot easier, and we really appreciate that. As I noted, the existing historic building was constructed circa 1820 and was originally located to the north. I'm not going to go so much into all of the history of the building. I think we all know it quite well. It's remarkably intact in terms of its front facade, although there is some question about that secondary entrance here, if that was originally a window and then was, you know, altered. But it's been like that for a long time. It's acquired historic significance. So in a nutshell, I mean, the architect's going to walk you through this. The front facade is going to be kept as is. There is a proposal, which I'm going to go into in a minute, to add a new canopy above the existing front entrance. Staff, when reviewing the Secretary of the Interior Standards, visual compatibility standards, and the design standards, came to the conclusion that that is not a compatible alteration as recommending against changing this facade. It's a wonderfully simple federal style facade, and it's staff's view that based on the standards that we have to apply and the ordinances, that it should remain as is and not be altered. We've made that clear to the applicant. We don't ambush people, so they're aware of that. We included some sandboard maps and some photos of actually the house when it was moved. So that actually the foundation is not original, obviously, because it was picked up and moved to this site. In addition, the rear elevation has seen some changes, as one might expect in Savannah, with some alterations to fenestration, windows, doors, et cetera, all of that. So getting back to, we get to our PowerPoint. So again, the applicant is proposing a rear addition, and here's the site in question. Again, surface parking lot to the west, surface parking lot to the south. This is O House, which is owned by the Savannah College of Art and Design. Non-contributing, and then you've got the Civic Center here. That being said, you do have some wonderful buildings around Orleans Square. A lot of our analysis had to do, and I know it will likely be the topic of discussion, with visual compatibility. And as Mr. Jones noted, the ordinance states that it should be visually compatible with the contributing buildings. And this is something that I know the architect spent a lot of time on from our discussions, and it's something that staff spent a lot of time on. And one of the challenges with Orleans Square, I would say almost more than any other square, is when you look at the contributing buildings, which we dived into, there's quite a variety. So this is a contributing building. This is also owned by SCAD. The contributing buildings date, the time period is about 100 years or so. Then as we go to the south, and I appreciate you indulging me, this block from when I lived here many years ago has always fascinated me because to me, it's what makes Savannah, Savannah. You have these two houses here of a certain era and architectural style. Then you have these really distinctive two masonry brick houses that have staircases that I've never seen anywhere else. And I've talked to a lot of people in Savannah and they've always thought, wow, why did they end up like that? Then you have a frame house. Then you have an apartment building. Then you have these two paired houses. Then you have a frame house here. And of course, kind of the crown jewel on the square right here, which I think we all love. But then you also have church's building here, which is very nice, but of a totally different architectural vocabulary and scale. Then you have a building that I think some of you all remember was former gas station here. Then you have some houses here, two houses along here. And then along Oglethorpe Avenue on this block. You have this large apartment building, and you've got the two houses, and then you've got 123, the house in question, right here. So it's a challenge in terms of visual compatibility. Also, we would note that originally this building was actually not located here. It was across the street. And so the applicant, I'll let the applicant talk about it. But the applicant also talked about potential visual compatibility with the Telfair and some of the other buildings where this building was historically. One of the other things that staff looked at very closely was the question of massing along the lane. This is not your, in staff's view, this is not what a lot of people think of the lanes of Savannah, where you have three-story homes, and then behind them you might have one or two-story carriage houses. As you can see in this image, street view here, you have large buildings that actually come all the way back and front on this lane. So the context here, contributing buildings, is a little bit different than you might have, say, down on Jones Street or down on Monterey Square or some of the other sites. So just going to jump into it. I would also note, I can pass it around, the applicant did provide material samples, which I can let the applicant walk you through. Probably it's better if he does it than I do. But again, the existing historic building from 1820, a hyphen that would then connect to the proposed three-story rear addition. And I'm going to let the project architect walk you through a lot of this. But again, this is the front elevation facing Oglethorpe. This is the proposed south elevation, the rear elevation that would be fronting on the lane. And if you bear with me, and let me go back to, sorry about that. Okay, so. Again, we looked very closely at the visual compatibility of this building. There's a debate, without going too much into the weeds here, but I wanted to note, if you look at the Secretary of the Interior standards, they are very clear that new construction should be distinct from old and must not attempt to replicate historic buildings elsewhere to avoid creating a false sense of historic development. So this has been a debate that's been raging in the preservation community, as I'm sure you know, since the beginning. And it's the debate I remember people talking about in Savannah 20 years ago, and when the Jepson Center was built, you know, should everything be historicist? And I know there's a lot of concern, understandable concern, about the Historic Landmark District, National Historic Landmark District, and it potentially being threatened. But it's staff's view, based on the Secretary of the Interior standards, that the response to that is not to fill all the vacant lots or vacant pieces of land with buildings that look like they're from 1820, when in fact they're from our current period. I will not get on my soapbox here, but we had a discussion about another project, and we made the point that we all love the Scottish Rite building, and next to a series of row houses. And would a building like that be considered visually compatible now? And as I was just walking you through that block, what Savannah is not Bath, England, or other European, or even the brownstones of Brooklyn, where I grew up, where you have uniform rows. What makes Savannah distinctive is it's actually this wild collection of all different architectural styles. And I remember when I wrote a paper back in graduate school, there were some discussions about certain buildings that were built at the turn of the century, and many of the people in Savannah objected to them, and now they're some of the most beloved buildings. So anyway, it's a long-winded way of saying that we did look very closely at the visual compatibility. But in terms of the Secretary of the Interior standards, I wanted to get back to that. The proposed addition, staff believes meets the standards. The existing historic building is retained. There is a proposal, as you may have noted, to add some windows on the side elevation, on the east elevation. That side elevation was actually altered when the building was moved, as one would expect. That stucco that you see there is not historic, because remember, this was a row house when it was on the other side of the street. And then when it was moved to the south, it suddenly became a freestanding building. So they're proposing, so in terms of, you know, what they're proposing to do to the 1820 building, staff feels it meets the standards with the one exception of the proposed addition of that canopy, over the front, entrance, the main entrance on Oglethorpe. Staff does not feel that it's visually compatible. This is a federal style building. You probably all know federal style is very simple, kind of not a lot of ornamentation. And so adding that, staff felt did not meet the standards. In terms of the overall scale and massing, staff did feel it was, again, both visually compatible and meets the standards. And I just wanted to walk through, again, this visual compatibility criteria. Staff went out as a group, walked the two war areas there, the two squares, took a lot of photos. But again, this is what I'm talking about, what we're talking about on the lane, that there are larger buildings on this lane and on adjacent lanes. We also looked at the variety in terms of the windows, the fenestration that exists on contributing buildings. We're not talking about the Civic Center or the Jefferson Center or the federal building. This is a view of the Telfair Academy. It has a curved corner, which I think most people feel is pretty successful. As well, there's really a variety of materials. There's and colors found on the contributing buildings, which I can go into more detail on. The other question, which we had when we first met with the applicant, was the question of, you will see from Oglethorpe this addition at the rear. It's always hard to tell when you have like an elevation drawing. It often looks very flat, but this is actually set quite a bit back. There's going to still be this side yard, which we feel is appropriate and again meets the standards. But in walking around Savannah, it struck us again that there are a number of buildings, houses, that have either original sections on their back or later additions that actually come out a little bit into the side yard, whether they be porches or solid areas. And so again, it was staff's view that met the standards. So with all of that, and I'm sure you'll have questions, and I know there's going to be a lot of public comment, we're going to have the architect walk through it. And I'm going to go through this in a little more detail in a second. So staff is recommending approve part two design details for alterations rear addition to the property located at 123 West Oglethorpe Avenue with the following conditions, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. Again, the first condition relates to the 1820 building. To meet the Secretary of the Interior Standards 2 historic character, the proposed installation of the metal canopy on the front elevation on West Oglethorpe Avenue above the first floor entrance should be removed from the scope of work. I'm going to jump to number three quickly because it's just a minor thing. The applicant, I know, is going to walk you through this. Additional information is needed on the proposed location of the refuse storage area to determine if the standards are met. But the big one, in our view, is the second one. I'm sure you all have experienced this in Savannah and other places, but it's really the execution often that determines whether a more contemporary design or a different design is successful or not. And so, as we understand it from what was submitted, they're proposing to use a storefront system for the windows on the three-story rear addition. as you know, we have very specific standards in terms of how we have to apply things with windows. So it's a little hard. And then we have storefront standards. And so I know the applicant is going to walk you through there, but staff wanted some more clarification on what exactly that storefront system would look like. Staff had some concerns in terms of visual compatibility that the facades, that the elevations, I should say, but the overall facade of this new addition not appear too flat. I know from talking with the project architect, we know that they really want to have this be a rich facade. But again, those shadow lines, the playing of the different planes is going to be really critically important to whether this is ultimately successful. The last thing I would note, I know I've spoken for quite a bit, is that we did review this based on the existing conditions. So we don't know what's going to happen to this lot here. We don't know what's going to happen to this lot there. So we reviewed it based on what it, the visibility right now. That being said, in, it is not unreasonable to anticipate, given the redevelopment of the Civic Center and these parking lots, that eventually there will likely be buildings on these lots that you see right here. So again, the visual impact of this will be change over time, likely. But again, we didn't assume that was going to happen. So we based it on looking again at the contributing buildings, both to the south and the north, east, west, in this very unusual context within the downtown historic district. So I can answer any questions, or maybe you would like to hear from Michael, the project architect.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there big questions for staff at this time, or can we invite the applicant? Sure. Thank you, Jonathan. We're going to take a brief 5-minute recess.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call us back to order. And before we hear from the petitioner on this one, we did have one board question for staff. Jonathan, if we could have a moment.
Of course.
Mr. Higgins.
During the course of your discussions with the applicant, did you have any discussions about possibly pushing the envelope a little bit more as far as the design of the addition? What brings to mind, as you mentioned, the Jepson in your comments. This seems a little institutional. Mm-hmm. So did you have any discussions about, you know, pushing it one way, the other way, anything?
No, it's a great question, Mr. Higgins. We didn't really, I mean, we stated that, you know, as per the standards, that we feel that new construction should be of its period. But the applicant had already kind of arrived at a design that they felt comfortable with. So we were trying to look at all the standards and whether they met them. And we had questions about how it was going to connect to the historic building and protection of historic fabric. But I would say, in general, we are always very supportive. You may remember there was a project you all recently approved at 3 MLK, very contemporary, of contemporary design. But it's a good question. But yeah, we did not, the applicant came to us with a design that we thought, you know, met the standards. But we're definitely supportive of interesting design, however you want to phrase it.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Were there additional questions for Jonathan? Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hello, my name is Ryan Charles. I'm representing the property owner at the Rhino Collective. I just wanted to come up and speak to you all briefly before I hand over my time to Michael Garcia, who was the project architect, and because I know you're all going to be trapped here for a while. So I wanted to respect your time. I don't have like a big presentation or anything. Just have a few visuals for you. I'm going to open this document if it lets me. The Preservation Brief 14 is one of the items that the National Park Service provides in order to look at additions to historic buildings, and MPC staff is able to utilize this within their review. So as many of you know, I have about a decade of experience in historic preservation, specifically regarding preservation laws and advocacy. And then, as you know, recently the National Park Service had us on a threatened status for our landmark district, and then that went away as they're doing the updates to their program. So when we were looking at doing an addition to this building, us as the ownership team decided it would be a good idea to just fully embrace the idea of the National Park Service's rules, and we specifically found Preservation Brief 14 and kind of looked through it for advice on how to move forward with creating an addition. So I'm just going to quickly go through this document a little bit with you. So sorry if I talk too long. On this first page, you'll see it says most historic districts or neighborhoods are listed in the National Register of Historic Places for their significance within a particular time. This period of significance of historic districts, as well as individually listed properties, may sometimes lead to a misunderstanding, which I feel like we see a lot. A misunderstanding that inclusion in the National Register may prohibit any physical change outside of a certain historical period, particularly in the form of exterior additions. The National Register listing does not mean that a building or district is frozen in time and that no change can be made without compromising the historic integrity. And throughout this document, you'll see images that they include as appropriate additions, which are visible from all public rights of way, a lot of them. They're very large, but they are separated by hyphens, which, as you know, we included in ours as well. Again, another large addition, separated by a hyphen, deemed appropriate by the National Park Service. This one's on a similar style house, a little bit more Georgian than ours, a colonial revival with a large boxy addition at the rear, which they determined was appropriate. Again, another similar height building, hyphen in the middle, National Park Service is deeming appropriate. On this page specifically, they state that the appropriate size for a new addition will vary from building to building. It can never be stated in a square or cubic footage ratio, but the historic building's existing proportion, site, and setting can help some general parameters for enlargement. It also states that generally constructing the new addition on a second side or rear elevation, secondary side or rear elevation, in addition to material preservation, will also preserve the historic integrity of the property. And I feel as though we've done that. So again, more large additions. Some of them are a little taller than the historic buildings even and are deemed appropriate. It does say on this page that large new additions may sometimes be successful if they read as a separate volume rather than as an extension of the historic structure. So that's why we kind of leaned in on that new modern version. On this page, again, more. This page has some good information. There's no formula or prescription for designing a new addition that meets the standards. A new addition to a historic building that meets the standards can be any architectural style, traditional, contemporary, or a simplified version of the historic building. This page also gives you some guidelines on how to look at new additions, such as incorporating a simple recessed small-scale hyphen to physically separate the old or new volumes, and to set the addition back from the wall. We've done all those except ours is kind of shifted off to the side, you've seen. It also says avoid designs that unify the two volumes into a single architectural whole, and that the historic building must be clearly identifiable and its physical integrity must not be compromising with the new addition. So we feel we've met the guidelines of Preservation Brief 14. So that's just what I wanted to show you with that document. I also, if I can get back to it, I'm not good with technology. Somewhere in here.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I created this map. Let me zoom out a little bit. Which staff actually did a really good job of pointing this out already when they did their little walkthrough. We utilized this document as our main driver, kind of as what was seen around the property. So on this map, you'll see parcels outlined in red, as well as some infilled with orange. The ones outlined in red are non-contributing or immediately developable properties surrounding ours. Ours is this little corner cutout up here. I don't know if you can see the hand. Okay. So the orange ones are all surface parking lots or a parking garage that you see down here on the left. Our property sits as the dividing line between a large mass of historic buildings and what is entirely developable land minus this one building here. I did want to inform you all that this large portion of parking lot that's immediately to the west of our property, we are in due diligence for the purchase of, and we are planning to construct a building on that site as well. We just don't have those plans to show you all yet, but it is coming down the pipeline. So at some point, this property will only be visible from the rear and through that small space in the courtyard. But we have been in talks with Independent Presbyterian Church. I can't obviously speak for them, but they have also indicated that they are looking forward to developing this surface parking lot as well. So at some point, we will be entirely only visible if you are within the lane. Once these areas are developed within the near future, again, like I said, we'll only be visible from the lane. But I don't know if any of you have heard of Section 4-1010. I bring this up to myself a lot. But 4-1010 of our ordinance actually prohibits any pedestrian or vehicular access to the lanes. You are not to traverse them unless it is for official city business or you are a property owner who is accessing your property to the rear. So I always want to say this is a very secondary portion of the property and at some point is not supposed to be visible really to the public right of way. And again, seeing the massive amount of development, this is going to occur soon, whether we like it or not, to the west. We wanted to utilize this building as somewhat of a transition from that historic portion of town to the modern sites that you see, like the SCAD building, the Civic Center site, and the vast swath of surface parking lots. I also understand, based on the amount of opposition letters that we got and what they said, a lot of people believe that this structure is ugly. I'm going to use that in quotes. I find a lot of architecture ugly. I don't think that falling water is pretty. It's not my favorite. But a lot of people love it, see? So our addition is modern, yes, but we would ask that just because some people may find it ugly, that it should not be denied because it's ugly to some people. But if it were to magically go that route, which I hope it doesn't, we would rather ask for a continuance because materiality, colors, things like that are all amendable and we would be willing to work with you all on whatever needs to happen. I also wanted to mention with those opposition letters, we did also, I don't know if you read through them all, received 20 letters of support from very large groups and organizations around downtown Savannah that own large amounts of property and are our neighbors. We did also receive some from our neighbors. So we just wanted to say that we personally find this appropriate and I'll let Michael take over. Thank you.
Thank you. Just be sure to state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Garcia, representative for Ellis3P Associates and for the Rhino Collective. I want to thank first staff and my client for doing so well in establishing how we are looking to be perceived through this project through actual through the way that the project has been analyzed and looked through in accordance with the Secretary of Interior standards, Brief 14, and then also the Savannah Zoning Ordinances or Code of Ordinances as well. I did want to bring a couple of updates to the project just because I do want to address the conditions that were provided by staff for the project as well. And I do also want to go a little bit more into, for example, Mr. Higgins, you asked if we were asked to push the design a little bit more. There were certain restraints that are kind of prohibiting us, and I can walk you through that in some regard as well. So the first condition that I do want to point out is the location of our refuse storage. So our property is roughly 46 and a half feet wide. The house sits at about 29 and a half feet wide. There is a 5-foot pathway between our property and the adjacent property. So what we have gone ahead and done is located our refuse storage adjacent to that pathway so that we have easier access to the lane to provide, to take our trash out, for day-to-day operations. As if nobody's aware yet, this will be a boutique hotel. It's going to be 17 units. Also, I should mention too that the ground floor is going to be a public public accessible cafe for not only the guests, but anybody that's going to be traversing through Oglethorpe Avenue as well. So the side yard was really important for us in terms of creating a unique experience that isn't quite often seen along Oglethorpe Avenue. So that's why our current jut out of the addition happens as it does, to kind of create an enclosure that allows the pedestrian or anybody in the public right away to be able to access that side. Regarding other specific moves that we had incorporated into the project based off of staff discussions, we did meet with staff about, I would say, three times between the 2 months that we were working on this, and several changes were done to the massing in response to their recommendations. One being that the hyphen was shortened in an effort to distinguish between the actual addition versus the existing building. It does also allow us to have the southwest corner of the building be prominent. However, we do align our addition to that building extent in an effort to keep the 5-foot pathway so that we are having a form of access along that side. As Ryan stated, we do expect in the coming months, hopefully, to start working on development for the adjacent lot to us, which is now just a parking lot, as everybody's aware. So visibility from Barnard Street would be very limited unless you're south of Orleans Square looking down. The other updates that I did want to share was we have removed the canopy. That was, I'll say, a bold attempt of ours to kind of tie in some sort of curved function that was part of the addition and bring it to the front elevation. But we are understanding of the fact that this is a Federalist building and it is a simple structure, so we do not want to interfere with that. And I did want to kind of just bring mention to the fact that we are, through this process, you know, modern design oftentimes, especially within the Savannah Hoods Historic District, is not deemed as worthy of developable. Oftentimes there are certain opinions that detract away from the fact that it will eventually be contributing resources to the historic district in the future. That being said, during our investigations of concept design and massing studies, we were very attentive to the fact of aligning window headers, as you can see through this, through the diagram that I'm showing. In fact, one of the comments that was provided to us by staff during our original meetings prior to submission was, lowering the third floor as to allow that to also be below the overall existing 1820 building structure. So that is why our windows don't align to that point as well, but they were at one point in alignment. Other things to discuss as well as of notable to mention are we do have certain architectural features that are part of contributing buildings within the historic district, and especially in our area. While they are not exact replicas, if there are cornices within this area, I think it is appropriate to provide cornices for our parapet. It's appropriate to screen mechanical equipment, even if it is along the right of way of the lane. And color matching and material palettes, which I can pass around to you guys in a little bit, was carefully selected. Ironically enough, looking at the Harper Folks House, they do have a patina of copper color that's almost like a green. And it is noted in our report that the Harper Folks House is a house noted for its material variety. They have stone masonry, they have brick, they have metal, they have copper, and wood shutters and wood windows. So the variety of materials, although they are more of modern use, still meets, in my opinion, within the alignment of the ordinance. Other things to note too, with regard to the way that we were developing the massing is, abutting to a property line obviously does not allow us to have any sort of window fenestrations just because of fire safety issues and life safety issues. So on our east elevation that abuts the three-story structure next to us, we do not have any sort of fenestrations, but we were hoping to at least provide some sort of like rhythmic intent with that facade. So you can kind of see we do curb our corner there, and then we do provide a cement tile horizontal stack surfacing to kind of change the depth of that facade without adding window fenestrations. We are more than happy to study this facade again and also provide additional rhythmic changes in the materiality. We were just trying to be very sensitive to the adjacent property. And then additionally too, for the west elevation, we currently are sitting 5 feet away from the property line. And if you go through IBC's chapter 5, that allows us for a 15% fenestration opening. along a certain surface that sits 5 feet within a property line. We're currently at 7%, so we are very open to providing additional openings if that's something that we can add to our study as we continue to develop the project. But ideally, like what we were trying to do in this instance too was push the hyphen back so that it's less visible as a connecting point between the two buildings when you are approaching on Oglethorpe and Barnard Street. So because that elevation is set back more than 10 feet, we are limitless in what we can provide in fenestration. So that's why that portion of our elevation massing study looks the way it does today. And again, I just wanted to kind of walk through some of these perspectives that we provided the MPC. What we've seen online seems to be one singular elevation that ultimately would not be visible once that property is developed and fully built out. So we did want to give a chance for the board to be able to see these portions again. Regarding our materials, we as a group did decide on stucco as our main base. Part of that is because, as again, we're adding to the physical record of the property. Stucco was an additional material added to the property once it was relocated. Both the east and west elevations have stucco along those elevations. So it kind of made sense to continue with that materiality and then provide pockets of different materials. I know cement tiles is at face value seen as an unconventional material, but we do in fact have a lot of different tiles, whether it be glazed cement tiles or actual cement tiles along Broaden Street. The former municipal building columns are of a tile finish. Starbucks windows underneath in their sill do have a tile finish, and so does Leopold's. Funny enough, that area of Broaden Street was developed during the 1950s, so we also know that that is probably material that's indicative of that era. So using this type of modern approach with the type of stacking pattern and all of that is truly intentional, along with the standing seam, which we were looking at as replicating a sort of different type of iron metal work that could be seen in the historic district as well. I'll pass around the materials for y'all just so you can see what that looks like.
Colors were very much selected based on right. So. And the best discuss
this. Yes, I have that too. Yeah. And then also, staff had asked us for additional information regarding our storefront system. We were speccing a storefront system that has been previously approved by the board in the past. It's seen in projects along 110 and 111 Ann Street. It's a YKK storefront system. This one that I'm speccing in particular is a YKK 45, which that number stands for the width, the depth of the actual mullions. So what we have is a 4.5-inch depth mullion with a sight line of 2 inches. That sight line of 2 inches means that the glazing is pushed back 2 inches. That, with the additional thickness of the materiality and the wall system, would bring us to the 3-inch minimum that's required for storefront glazing. We are open to changing this to a 6-inch storefront system because those do have a bulkier presence and you do have a little bit more of a profile, an ability to change the profile of those. So we are very much open to providing that as an alternative window spec as well, but it would also be clear glaze. We would not have any sort of tinting or any sort of frosted or fluted material on the actual glazing of the storefront system as well. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there questions for the applicant, Mr. Higgins?
Can you pull up the rear elevation?
The rear elevation? Yes. Jonathan, where's the PowerPoint? The PowerPoint, yeah. Yeah. The rendering's fine too. Oh. Is the rendering okay? Okay,
that's it.
Awesome.
I mean, I commend you on, you know, all the research and all the effort that you've gone into with this. Did you have any thoughts of perhaps
pushing the envelope further as far as modern elements. It seems a little institutional.
So thank you, first of all. Secondly, I am always for one to push the boundary when it comes to modern design. We, at certain different intervals during our meetings with staff, at one point we did have planters that were going to be in front of all of these windows. Stylistically, they might have been a little bit too bulky, so we were in the event of trying to submit all of this, they were removed. The idea was to kind of soften up the elevation a little bit with planters, having some growth and local fauna growing out of these planters that can kind of like cascade down would have definitely softened this up a little bit. I'm absolutely always open to suggestions when it comes to different approaches in terms of modern techniques. Part of our design concept too was pushing back that portion of the elevation so that we had a shadow line from the cornice above, or the parapet rather. That's also a kind of environmental decision as well, since that is the southern elevation, which would be receiving some of the harshest light during the day. So all of those decisions were taken into it. Always happy to continue pushing the envelope. So I'm glad that those are questions being asked.
I guess two of the things. One is, first of all, I must take issue with your compatriot's comment about falling water.
That's his comment, not mine.
But with regard to the west facade,
mm-hmm.
In the event that the other lot is not developed, which I know you say you're going to be developing in the near future, but we've seen other projects in the city where they were going to be done in the near future and are still not done.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts as to how to make that more visually interesting and compatible?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the reason that facade looks as it does is because the fact that we were within a 5-foot range from the property line, what we were trying to do is provide all of our egress access off of that side. So egress access, you cannot have windows within the staircase. You guys know that. Massing studies that we had done previously located the stair in different locations. It is doable. So there is the opportunity to be able to provide more fenestration openings. I do have to say though, we are just limited to the fact that it is 5 feet away from our property line. So fenestrations can help to add some more intrigue to that elevation, but I don't think we have quite the range that we would for the back elevation or some of our interior elevations that are not within purview.
Are there any other questions for the applicant? Mr. Thompson? Okay, thank you, Michael.
All right, thank you, guys.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? We ask that you please come forward, sign in, and state your name for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less.
I see you've received a number of responses regarding this proposed addition. Interestingly, those who are for it are business people and use their letterhead stationery. There's two real estate firms, a large car dealer, a cookie company, and a restaurant. However, over twice as many responses, respondents want you to deny this request. People who are residents, preservationists, art historians, and those who treasure our unique landmark historic district. This design to me is what can be called a fingernail on a chalkboard or a foghorn in a symphony. To add a futuristic building to an 1820s home the same age as the Davenport House is absurd. Perhaps such folly descends from the Secretary of Interior's admonition that additions to historic buildings must show by their design that they come from a different period. And I think you have on your screen what I do. These are pictures of modern additions to historic buildings. And I don't know how to scroll down, but you have quite a few interesting ideas. This one on the right, for example, a nice old building with a green square top. I mean, it's really kind of wild as to what is considered appropriate, especially not only in a traditional area, but on a traditional building. There are wiser urban planners and builders who have said that all you need to do with regard to this Secretary of Interior's admonition is just to put a date on the addition. Such people have said that, as Stephen Sims, he's head of the Notre Dame School of Architecture, or Ron Fleming, who's chair of Townscapes in Newport, Rhode Island. He's been a past member of the National Trust Board, the UNESCO Board, and so on. Consider, for example, the mansion on Drayton Street when it expanded from a Victorian home, and they picked up the turret of the old home and put it in the new addition, and even went to Iowa to get the exact color and shape of brick so that it all blended beautifully. And I think it's quite lovely. In contrast, today's proposed addition would be just another arrow in Savannah's golden goose, a world famous historic town. Please reject it.
Thank you, Ms. Woods. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Before I begin my statement, David McDonald with DNA is unable to be here today and wanted to be on record in support of my following statement. We appreciate the petitioner with meeting with me with HSF staff regarding this petition. However, our ARC is in opposition to this petition as it is being proposed. We agree with staff's recommendation to remove the curved metal entrance canopy, as it does not meet the Secretary of Interior standards, removes the visibility of a character-defining feature on the front facade, and is not visually compatible. We do appreciate the modern take on the addition. However, an addition is supposed to be secondary in scale and design to the modern building, and we do not feel that the proposed addition does that or is visually compatible in scale, as it reads heavy, or in design, as in regards to the multitude of window types, as there's flat head, round head, and segmental head, or in the materiality selections, as we feel that there's too many. We would appreciate a more refined, compatible design. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Please state your name for the record.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Jonathan, can you pull up my PowerPoint? And I would like to mention I was also in touch with David McDonald, and he expressed that the DNA is formally opposed to this project. Yeah, it's in the agenda.
Oh, it's in the agenda. Yeah. Okay.
While that's being pulled up, I would express that the OPC is not objecting to an addition per se, but we do object to the aesthetics of the skin of the building. We also, and I did ask Jonathan, I'm not familiar with a part one for this building.
Just a typo in the staff report. So this is an addition. There's no part one.
Okay. So, thank you. As you know, this building has received quite a bit of public opposition. People have very strong, visceral reactions. As was mentioned, the word ugly was used. There are other more extreme words that are used to describe this building, which I will not repeat. There were, as artists mentioned, there were approximately 30 letters, at least as of now, opposing it, many of which were residents, and the other letters were primarily from businesses, which is really sad to see. The proposal is we oppose it because it's not visually compatible with the more than 10 contributing buildings within view. Remember, you have to look at each building within view of the project. That's the test. And it doesn't meet the design standards, because the design standards, their entire intent and preface is that they're supposed to, the addition is supposed to complement the existing building and those 10 plus contributing buildings. As was mentioned, this is a really important location because this is how you arrive into Savannah on Oglethorpe. And the side of the federal building is visible, and obviously the addition will be highly visible for some time. The visual compatibility criteria addresses a number of items. One is the rhythm of solids to voids in front facades. And on the Lane facade, which is visible from Hull Street and visible from Barnard and visible from Orleans Square, you have this recessed section under a cantilevered cornice. Cornices are fine, but this is not taking a cornice and cantilevering it out over the facade has no precedent or relationship in terms of solids and voids to other buildings in the district. Also, visual compatibility requires looking at the materials, textures, and colors. And this textured green surface is just not something that you see. They said that it was on the Harper Folks House. Well, looking at green tinted copper and translating that into some kind of green tile, that is not a valid approach. In addition, the building has these wide white corners, and when they tie into the cornice, it looks quite odd. In fact, somebody said it looked like a porta-john. There are over a dozen contributing structures. Here's the list from the map supplement. And I drew sight lines from the site to each of those buildings. The Telfair is not one of them. It's not a relevant example. So let's go around and look. Here's the building in question. Here are the two adjacent buildings. I don't see any green tiles there. The building on the corner, note these are all federal. They use brick and stucco as their materials. Hull Street, this is, you'd see the building right here. So you're going to see bright green tile work when you're trying to look at these beautiful federal period townhouses. And, of course, Orleans Square. If you turned around 180, you'd be looking right at the building. And here's the Harper Folks House. You can see, yes, there's some green tinting in the copper, but I don't think that's a justification for green tiles across almost the entirety of a facade. Again, you can see the materials are brownstone and stucco and brick, contrasting dramatically with what the applicant is proposing. And the design standards have an introduction, which is about their intent. And yes, you're not supposed to, you know, necessarily make a copy of a design of the past, although that certainly is permitted. And there are architectural movements, the International Architectural Uprising, which is promoting traditional buildings. It's right now mostly in Europe. Hasn't really taken hold here, but people are, you can still play Beethoven in a concert. So you should still be able to practice classical architecture. But it's not required. But what is required is that the addition complement existing contributing resources. So this has to complement the front building as well as those 10 other buildings. And I really don't think this is much of a complement to the Harper Folks House.
Mr. Jones, please begin to wrap up your comments.
I'll wind up as Andrew Jones wearing my Oglethorpe Plan Coalition hat, and then I will reintroduce myself as Andrew Jones, the preservation liaison for the trustees of the Harper Folks House, who object strongly to this proposal. And it's highly visible from Orleans Square. It will detract from the experience of people coming to the Harper Folks House, which is a very important Greek Revival and Victorian structure. And when you arrive at the front to the left, you're going to see this bright green tile building with the sun from the south hitting it. It will detract from the experience, the historical and aesthetic experience of visitors to the house. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Do we have anyone online? Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
This is Ryan Charles with the Rhino Collective. I just have two quick things. One is, Mr. Higgins, when you were discussing with Michael, I just wanted to bring this up, the property next door, if we close on that, we will do it.
the Rhino Collective is who is also doing the East Side Theater. We're doing Apartments Down in Montgomery. This owner, once their mind is on something, it's going to happen. So once we close, we'll deal with that. But the next thing I wanted to bring was I love the idea of doing classical architecture. I love classical architecture. But I find it odd that the same person who just stated that we should have classical architecture come back is who fought 336 Barnard so hard, when that in itself is a modern form of classical architecture. But I just wanted to say I prefer modern for this edition. That's what we want, and that's what we're going to move forward with. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Did you have anything?
Yes, Michael Garcia with LSGP. I just wanted to reiterate, in terms of the material palette, contrary to what Mr. Jones was saying, I in no way intended for, you know, choosing a color based off of the fact that it was copper and all that stuff. It's about the material palette blending in with the rest of the contributing buildings. As staff has explained ad nauseum, it seems we were put against the contributing buildings and we were found to still be visually compatible. So personal opinion has no place in the court that we are in today. So just wanted to reiterate that. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
Well, I have to say I'm not a fan of this design in its location. It'd be wonderful if we could see how the area is going to develop, particularly the Civic Center. More likely we're going to get a lot more modern proposals there at some point when that goes forward. But, and I don't know what to suggest, except I don't like this design. I think it's a little big for the building that's next to it. I mean, the historic building next to it.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I too am not a fan of the design. I have absolutely no problem with an addition going on this. I little problem with the actual size of it. I think it could be made to read a lot less heavy. It seems very institutional. It reminds me of one of the courthouses on Telfair Square. I think the design could be pushed more to set it apart as a statement of architecture of 2024. Unfortunately, we do have to look at the current context, which does not have a large building in that parking lot. I know you say you're going to do it, but a well-known realtor knocked down a building years ago and said, oh, we're going to be building townhouses there, and it's still a vacant lot. So we have to look at the context as it currently exists. I also am hesitant to have us approve or deny this with barely meeting a quorum. I feel this is such an important project that a little bit more diversity in the board might not be a bad thing. So as even the architect mentioned, a continuance might be a good idea here, both so that they can go back and sharpen their pencils. And I just got to tell you, one of the buildings that you put up in your presentation of the modern monstrosities, one of them is my favorite of all time, which is I.M. Pei's pyramid. I think it is a masterpiece with the Louvre. I've been there multiple times, and it's just amazing every time I see it. And that shows what you can do when you push the envelope as far as you're differentiating additions, but they're both making statements. So I guess at this point, I would prefer we continue this, the architect can continue working with staff, and we can maybe haul a few more board members in here. I would feel much more comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
Well, I guess I will jump on the bandwagon. I appreciate what you guys have done because you've put an awful lot of work in coming up with this. But looking back at compatibility, we have some discussion about compatibility with this property and how compatible is it with a surface parking lot, how compatible with it with the gym that used to be some sort of warehouse. But to me, and I think we've already talked about this, the compatibility with the existing structure. You've got an 1820s building, and the building right behind it, I would almost bet that if this was being brought in as a completely separate property, that we would have some serious questions about the design. And so I'm leaning much toward our other board members and saying, one, I don't care for it because of its compatibility with the existing and with the neighboring properties. And I would support a continuance. I also agree that when everybody's vacation's over, maybe, we have a larger group to be able to discuss this.
I'll add my comments since we're so limited in numbers today. I do feel that this project warrants a little bit more time, and you know, certainly respect the architects and the presentation that was made today and the design that was presented. I would caution both myself and fellow board members and members of the public to understand that personal preference is not something that should be considered, and this decision has to be based on Secretary of the Interior standards and their preservation standards, and so that's what we're asked to review projects looking through that lens. So I think whatever the decision is today, that is kept in mind. And if you are reaching out to board members or to staff or submitting comments, try to base it on something that is in our purview or in our scope of something that we're able to review. I do think as well that when we're looking at things like this and projects that do have such strong feelings from our community, that to be good stewards of that, having a full diverse board is important. And I know that's not the applicant's fault, and I apologize for that, victim of timing and summer in the South. But hopefully, if the decision is to continue, it'll give you a little bit more diversity and a more fair vote that's representative of the entire community. And those are just my thoughts, but I will pass it back to Mr. Thompson to go around a second time.
Okay, well, I am in agreement with all the other board members here. I think it was a very good point about having a more full board attendance to discuss this again. And if I express an opinion of this building, I think staff has found this building to be buildable under the standards, but I still think that its relationship with the existing building and buildings and the color scheme and the design are just not a visually compatible fit for this area. So, but I think a continuance would help the process.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment other than, yeah, visual compatibility.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
Nothing further.
Okay, at this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to petition 24-003354 COA 123 West Oglethorpe continue the petition for a period of not more than 90 days so that the architect can further refine and review the design for visual compatibility both to the Oglethorpe Street House and to the surrounding contributing properties.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to continue to, for a period not to exceed 90 days, to allow the architect to examine visual compatibility with surrounding contributing buildings. Do I have a second?
Who will second?
All right. We have a motion from Mr. Higgins, a second from Houle. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
All right. The ayes have it. That petition is continued. Next up on the agenda is the item that was moved from other business onto the regular agenda, item number 15, stucco text amendment.
Thank you. Thank you for that discussion. We thank the public for, again, for all of their letters, emails on that project. So as we discussed a bit during our pre-meeting, we wanted to talk to you about a proposed ordinance change for the definition of true stucco. The Historic Preservation Commission had a subcommittee meeting in May of this year, where we discussed this issue with the definition of true stucco. In it, in a quick summary, at the end of 2022, the definition of stucco, of true stucco, was changed to require that it be only on masonry construction. So you couldn't do it on frame construction. We were asked to do a deep dive into this, see how other cities handle it, other municipalities, see what the National Park Service's opinion is on it. So the subcommittee met a few times on this. The subcommittee, I'm going to walk you through, proposed some changes to the existing ordinance. The subcommittee voted unanimously to send it to the full HPC at their meeting just a couple weeks ago, June 26th. The HPC voted unanimously to have the proposed revisions move forward to the Planning Commission and then the City Council. This would be applicable to you all, the Savannah Downtown Historic District, as well as for the other historic districts. And so I'm just going to go through what we've come up with. We are big believers in keeping things simple. And again, we did do quite a deep dive into this. As I mentioned, this came up at a Historic Preservation Commission meeting for a proposed project on Brady Street, where the chair noted that the standards had been changed, the regulations, in terms of the definition of, quote, true stucco. And so you'll see right down here, this was a building in the Streetcar Historic District. You can see where it's highlighted here in terms of true stucco. And we also noted, and as I'm sure you're aware, we've been looking at all of our ordinances. Sometimes the language is confusing for applicants. And so, for example, as you see right here, in the existing language, it says prohibited materials, and it says one part stucco over insulation and or wood or metal framing. The architect for this project said, well, we're doing three part stucco over wood. So it's not listed as prohibited, but yet it doesn't meet the definition of true stucco. So the two things don't meet. So this is the change that took effect on 11/22/2022. The definition of true stucco, exterior plaster applied as a two or three part coating directly onto masonry. Exterior insulation finishing system or EIFS is not considered stucco for the purpose of this ordinance. Another concern that staff had, and I know the city had, was when this change was made, you were kind of really getting into means and methods. And there was a question legally whether this could actually be enforced. So that was just a side note I would like to bring to you. So again, what we're proposing, we like to keep things simple. and I'm going to walk you through all of this. MPC staff recommends the following: striking the words directly onto masonry in the historic ordinance, section 13.5, adding additional information to the definition of true stucco in section 13.5, to define for applicants two coat and three coat stucco more clearly. A lot of people don't, it's not a bad thing, they just don't know what stucco is. And so we wanted to provide a little more clarification for that. And then that section where it's confusing, striking the words over insulation and or wood or metal framing, because again, it's not really clear. So here are proposed changes. In terms of the definition of true stucco, exterior plaster applied as a two or three part coating, removed directly onto masonry, directly onto masonry. And then we added a definition that there's no shame in plagiarizing. We lifted this actually from the New York City Landmarks Preservation Commission, where there's a definition. We thought it was and I passed this by a number of folks. And then again, in the prohibited materials, getting rid of that. So basically what we want to make clear is one part stucco is not permitted. It should be two or three parts stucco, but take out this confusing over insulation and or water. Because again, if you're an applicant, you're saying, well, I'm not doing that, so I should be allowed to do that. And to just give you a little more information, we did look at New York City. Again, we lifted a lot of that from them. We also looked at Washington, D.C. I also had discussions with some former folks I worked with at the National Park Service. We looked at the National Park Service standards. They do not say that you can't do stucco over frame construction. Again, we also reached out to the architectural community here in Savannah. And it was interesting, once we brought this up when we were having some of our pre-meetings, Kelly can attest to this, and Caitlin, if she was here, it was unanimous, where the minute we mentioned this, every architect that we spoke to said, you know, that stucco thing doesn't make any sense. It should have never been changed. We have gotten kind of unanimous support. And again, the Historic Preservation Commission spent a lot of time on this. We had a subcommittee that met twice. And then we had the full Historic Preservation Commission, and they unanimously voted to send this to the Planning Commission and then the City Council. And in closing, again, we have had discussions with the city. They also are in agreement on this. So does that all make sense, hopefully?
Yeah, that makes sense. Sure.
Jonathan, could you roll back to the large addition that you had in track changes marked in yellow? There it is.
Sorry, Mr. Boyd.
I think I heard that you cribbed this from somewhere else, and there's no problem with that.
Yeah.
But was this discussed with any of the people that you talked to? That
yes.
Said, the old leave it alone, take it away. What did they think about this language?
I'm sorry, do you mean the people who changed it?
No. The people you talked to in town.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yes, we did talk to them about adding a clearer definition, because they said it was very interesting to hear from the architect community that often when they spoke to their clients, people didn't understand what stucco really was. They were kind of like, well, you know, and then they would say to them, they would explain to them, there's two parts stucco, there's three parts stucco, and go through it. And so basically everybody thought it made sense to add just some more, again, kind of educational, explain to people what this material is. And it was interesting in our discussions with the Historic Preservation Commission as to why this change had come about. And a lot of it was over, not all of it, but a lot of it was over concern of some new construction buildings that were stucco over frame and that were not terribly well executed, I think it's fair to say. And so the stucco started to streak because they got moisture behind it. There's one right next to the Kroger that was cited by our chair a number of times. But again, our analysis was that's really more of a means and methods. You know, you can do brick construction badly. You can do stone construction badly. It doesn't mean you say, well, you can't use brick or you can't use stone. It's more how something is done. And we also asked for some technical advice. The project in question, the representative who was working on that project, the architect, got a representative from a company that deals with stucco. And that was, to be totally candid, a real learning experience for us in terms of how the best way in this climate to do in terms of making stucco on a frame construction work on new construction. And this lady was amazing. She went through in depth, which I can share with you, how it's done. And she said, again, you're kind of getting more into the means and methods when you're saying you can't do this as opposed to stucco. And I'm sure you've all seen in Georgetown, where I used to work, there are hundreds of frame houses that were stuccoed at a later time. These are fantastic examples of American architecture contributing buildings. So it can be done. It's just about, we talked a little bit about the project. You're just talking about Oglethorpe. It's about the execution and the materiality.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there other questions for Jonathan?
I think only one. If this change is approved, how would it affect people that are currently in violation?
So it's not retroactive, if that's what you're asking about. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, we're going less restrictive, right? We're basically saying you can do it on frame or masonry. So, I mean, the other thing that, you know, we don't go in, you know, it's not our job to weigh in on financial implications. But it was very interesting also to hear from the architect community that they had a number of clients who said who want to build ADUs. There was one project, I won't give the address, where the architect said, I spoke to my clients, if we have to meet the existing ordinance, my clients are an older couple, they can't afford it. Like, they can't build a masonry building. It has to be frame. And we heard that from a number of different historic districts where people said there's a financial implication. And then we heard from some of the architects who work on larger scale projects where also the development community was concerned about that. But again, that wasn't why we made this change.
Are there any other questions for Jonathan? Is there a member of the public that would like to speak? I think it's relevant as this has been kind of an ongoing process.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for HSF. I just wanted to say that I've been involved with all these meetings with the subcommittee. I've sat in on them and then watched as this language was adapted. And we are in full support as it's written. In my other side of my life, as a consultant, we recommend means and methods all the time, and the definitions that you guys have been given are 100% accurate. So we're in support. That's all.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this matter? Okay. We can enter into board discussion. I'll go around. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
Well, I guess if we get this passed by City Council, we won't be stuck anymore on stucco. I couldn't resist it. It seems to me, a little bit I know about this business, that stucco on wood got a bad reputation because of that other product, EIFS or whatever it's, and that, I think that's probably how it kind of evolved to where it is right now. And, you know, fixing it, is probably a good thing. So I don't know, maybe this is a question for the chair. Do we take action today to support this or?
Yeah, that's why we moved it to the regular agenda. Okay. So I think it makes it easier for City Council to see that there's a unified support amongst the boards that this change would affect.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Higgins?
Nothing other than it's about time.
Mr. Hull?
We the city found a problem and has fixed it. Great.
Okay, at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review support the stucco text amendment as presented.
We have a motion of support from Mr. Higgins. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thompson, second. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. Motion is approved. All right, moving on to approved staff reviews, work performed without a certificate of appropriateness, and report on items deferred to staff. There were none this month. So notices and proclamations, stamp drawing report was attached to the agenda and included in your packet. And on to other business. The one agenda item was moved to the regular agenda, but I think we have.
You just need to take a motion to approve the staff reviews. You can do them all at once. You don't have to read them all out.
Did I skip those? I did.
You don't have to read all of them, but.
Oh, wait a second. I don't have any staff reviews on mine. No. Oh, is that the new agenda? I'm working on the agenda from yesterday. Sorry.
Okay. You can just, if you're comfortable with our staff reviews.
Oh, sorry.
It should be number 14 through 22.
Yep, I do see them. I will entertain a motion to combine the staff reviews items 14 through 22.
Madam Chair, this is Houle. I move that the Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the staff reviews. Is it looks like 15 through 22?
14 through 22.
You're correct, Mr. Lee.
Sorry,
yes,
you are right.
15, yes, you're correct, sir.
Having a tough day today. All right, there is a motion to approve staff reviews, items 15 through 22. Is there a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
All right, the staff reviews are approved. Making sure I'm looking at the right agenda. There's no work performed without a certificate. No items deferred to staff. Stamp drawing report was attached to the agenda and included in the packet. Other business. I think we had a few things that came up in pre-meeting that we wanted to add to the record. One is this board has requested clarification on the process and procedure for notification when a board decision is being reviewed and or appealed by another body. The director did give me a stack of papers. I don't know if I can get Bree to scan these and send them to everybody else so that everyone has the same thing. She did provide some clarification on the process and, you know, has agreed to further look into it. But I think it's, you know, important to us that it is put in the record that we have requested clarification of how that process works. Sure.
Good afternoon. Edward Marl, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. My apologies for my tardiness. I should have been here during the pre-meeting to talk about this. So Development Services and the Historic Boards are situated a little bit differently in that Bree has what I'll call the luxury of receiving the applications directly. I understand it is both a blessing and a burden because it means that when things are complete, when pre-application meetings have occurred, all requirements have been met, you have the ability to kind of gatekeep and to say this can move forward, this cannot. Development Services, unfortunately, does not enjoy that relationship with the city. Applications that go to the boards that I personally serve are received by the Planning and Urban Design Department at the City of Savannah. I will say that they, I believe, do their best to get them to us in a timely manner. But unfortunately, I do often receive applications that are not 100% complete. As the Secretary of the ZBA, I do not enjoy the opportunity to have a pre-meeting with every applicant, and applications are received. And I, as a courtesy, will generally attempt to move those forward because sometimes they are not things that require extensive pre-application. But if you have a tricky concern that might, you know, involve coordination with other departments, such as the driveway situation that you all experience here, wherever you have issues with other departments, it is often necessary to have those pre-conversations to under, to just to make sure that we're not making decisions that run afoul of each other's regulations. So all of that to say, these applications for appeal are received directly by the city. We do not always necessarily have pre-knowledge that they are coming forward. They will sometimes kind of come in the form of hearsay, hey, we're interested in doing X, Y, and Z. And eventually we receive this a day, 2 days, 3 days after the deadline has passed. And of course, our boards kind of overlap. And so I will often be dealing with MPC, the county ZBA, city council, county commission, all of those things. And so I get to them kind of like now. Now is the time when, like today, my MPC agenda will go out with the preliminary agenda for the next cycle. So all of these, just kind of this number of factors kind of play into why it's sometimes a little bit wonky and disjointed. So unfortunately, we're not always aware that these have come in. And I will say, if you would allow me the opportunity, it is absolutely vitally important because as they come to me, it is my responsibility to look at the decisions that come from these boards and to sort of trace back and say, what is actually appealable? What is it that I need to advise my board to be able to say, this is kind of your range of options, and this is the basis for the decision that you are making. So if I could just please ask that whenever you are making a motion, go in and look at each of your stipulations, you know, associated with the decision that you're making, and to point it directly to something so that if another board in handling that appeal has to go back and parse through your decision, you have pointed directly to something that is founded well in the ordinance to be able to say, this is what the determination was made on. So unfortunately, we have not yet gotten fully on top of this, but we are making efforts. We obviously want to make sure that everything is good for our boards and for our petitioners. And so we appreciate your patience in working with us as we sort of get our processes up to the place I think we'd all like them to be.
Certainly. And I think what we discussed fairly heatedly in pre-meeting is, you know, we understand that decisions get appealed, and that's not where we're taking issue. Where we take issue is when a decision of this board is appealed and it goes before the ZBA and staff is presenting and we're not notified. And so, especially in a case with our last one where this board decision was, you know, in opposition to the staff recommendation. And so it is relevant for a representative of this board to be made aware of that. And if the questions are being asked, what was the basis of the decision? Someone, myself, hopefully if I'm available, can be there and speak on behalf of the board. And it's not just, you know, a staff representing their case, because it's the board decision that's being appealed. And so it's a simple procedural thing when MPC or whoever, if you get notice that something is on the agenda and is being appealed, we should be notified in some manner, an email, something. And so that's kind of the issue that we wanted addressed to make sure that we are included in that communication and made aware when those situations come up. And the second thing that you bring up is something that we've been talking to staff a lot about, and maybe it can be a collaborative effort, but the lack of board training. This is an all-volunteer board, and people come on and rotate off and have various levels of experience, both with Robert's Rule, the city ordinance, preservation standards, the ZBA, the appeal process. It's a lot to ask someone who's coming in to understand the context and the importance of the wording of motions. And so additional training for board members so that they understand how proper motions are to be made. And it's, you know, I know that we have a packet that gives kind of the, it gives you like a little bit of a, you know, format, but it doesn't talk about the importance and the criteria that it needs to be hung on. And I think that that would be relevant. So if that's something that can be done in collaboration with your office and development services, and MPC staff or somebody needs to be brought in, you know, that's something that we continue to ask for because I think it's important that people are armed with the right information.
Absolutely.
But we appreciate you coming to our meetings. You're welcome every time.
Thank you.
Good man.
Was there anything else in other business?
I just wanted to quickly note this house you all are probably familiar with. Wonderful house. You all, I want to speak for all of you. I don't recall the vote as far as here. But anyway, they've removed this piece. And I noticed when I this is my lunch walk, that a portion of the facade had fallen onto the sidewalk. The windows are falling out and the house was unlocked. You could go into the backyard. You could go. So I have been in contact with the project architect. She was great. She was in contact with the owner about getting the site secured. I've let the city know about it because our concern obviously was with this historic resource and also public safety that things were falling onto the sidewalk because it's been sitting there for a while. But hopefully, just so you know, it is on our radar. I've been hounding the architect who's the liaison with the owner that they need to make sure that, for example, like the backyard, you can't just like go in. I went down the street and there were people back there who don't live in that house. So we're a little concerned about the house.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Hopefully, you know.
And one of your board members, you know, lives two or three doors down from this.
Yeah. And this, it's hard for me to imagine that that's not like a code compliance or a safety issue. That would.
Yes, we brought that to the attention of the project architect. One of my predecessors, I always get them to Ethos. Yes, Ethos. Yeah. So just so you know, it's on our radar. We're keeping a very close eye. I walk by it every day. So.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
Was there anything else under old or new business? Okay. Well, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. All right. All those in favor? Hi, we are adjourned.